Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this episode, we have Doug Wagner back on the show. Now, Doug's got a really big following. Most of you are going to know who he is. We've had him on before. And, Doug, many of his fans, he's probably known to be a musky guy that also catches big walleyes at times. For this conversation, we really just focus on the spring trophy walleye bites that Doug guides on and just his past experiences with it. And it's all Green Bay walleyes. We're talking Great Lakes, big, giant trophy walleyes. And specifically, like now, Doug, his guiding in the spring is on Green Bay and the Green Bay tributaries, the big spring bite. Needs no introduction, really, but it's a great highlight, this time of year. This year, I think there's going to be, it's going to be a great bite. It's already started out there. There's definitely been quite a bit of fishing going on over there in Green Bay. But for this conversation and just Doug specifically, Doug is just one of my favorite all-time guests. I feel like he epitomizes, just the hardest worker in the room. And, Doug is just a wealth of information. In fact, just all the information that he has content related, go to his YouTube page, Doug Wagner. That's Doug Wagner, W-E-G-N-E-R. Find him, find his YouTube page and look him up after this. But, what I think I get the most out of a podcast or out of a conversation like this, we talk a little bit about fishing or a lot of it about fishing, but just having Doug tell stories, personal stories, and just how he reflects on his own fishing experiences is an opportunity for us to kind of look at his fishing through his lens. And to me, that's the takeaway. Doug has got a mentality of fishing, a strategy for fishing, power fishing, walleyes in the spring and with rip and wraps on Green Bay. It's like I get more just sort of, getting the vibe of his mentality and just learning his mentality, his relentless pursuit of trophy fish and greatness in fishing. That some of the technical information, some of the details, albeit great information and a great takeaway, no matter where you fish. But even to have Doug on the podcast, I just want to spend as much time as possible listening to him tell his own story, because to me, that's the inspiration that I can get. The biggest inspiration that I can get from Doug Wagner, man. He's just a grinder, and he's super smart, high fishing IQ, and he knows what he's talking about. His experiences are invaluable, and it's just fun to hear him break down some of his philosophies on trophy walleyes on Green Bay in the spring. So anyways, that's my intro. Let's get into this interview. Doug Wagner, Green Bay Walleyes. Let's do it. This JMO podcast is brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales in West Bend, Wisconsin. Cedar Lake Sales is Southern Wisconsin's largest Crestliner dealership, so whatever you're looking for, whether it's something family-oriented or a pontoon, maybe you're looking for a traditional fishing boat or step it up to something that you can travel around and fish tournaments in, they are well known to have it all easy to check out in their huge indoor heated showrooms. Now, with a great service department and the confidence of their customers, Cedar Lake Sales is celebrating 55 years of trusted business. Again, if you are shopping for a boat, your shopping is not done until you've talked to a salesperson at Cedar Lake Sales. For more information on what they got, what they offer, head to the link in the description of this podcast. That's www.cedarlakesales.com. I know we talked about it last time, but kind of some of your backstory, where does this all begin for you with this like trophy walleyes in and around Green Bay? Where does it start?
Yeah, it goes back quite a ways. As far as like, I'd say the fishery, it's more like a fishery as a whole. Like, I guess I'm primarily known as a musky guy, but walleyes are a huge, huge part of what I do throughout the year. And I absolutely love fishing for them, but it's more so just like, being raised or grew up around the Great Lakes was super important, and especially the Green Bay area. I mean, I grew up 2 hours south of Green Bay, and really it kind of all started for me with ice fishing with my dad and some family friends, and we would go up and ice fish the northern Door County stuff in search of big giant pike and brown trout. And every now and again, we'd run into some big giant walleyes. But I mean, it basically started as ice fishing. And then from there, I just got more and more, or just fell a lot more and more in love with the fishery as a whole, and just the allure of the Great Lakes and all the things that swam there, and like the fish themselves and just the size of them and the scenery. And, you know, when we first started ice fishing up there, this was probably 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005. Like, I was really young. I mean, I was 8 to 10, 12 years old when I started going up there. And it was so crazy. I mean, there was nobody fishing any of that stuff back then. And even today, I could go back to some of the spots we fished, and there's still nobody fishing a lot of those areas. But now, obviously, the bay itself has got more and more popular just due to the size of the fish, and the fishery itself is booming, and it's such an incredible place to be and to fish as a whole.
Yeah, man. Like, what do you remember about the fishing? I find some of these, like, you know, stories, or just looking back, those reflective kind of like experiences, to be fun. I mean, you know, we talk so much about the changing technology and just how cutting edge everything is nowadays, and we, you know, everybody's pushing the envelope, but it's fun to look back and just remember, you know, different things or simple things about the fishing. Maybe it's the equipment, or maybe it's just the people you fished with. Any of those like fun experiences that you feel like were kind of impactful to you, and, you know, any specific stories, you know, where you caught your first big walleye or whatever, you know, whatever it was, anything from back then that really sticks out story wise?
Yeah. Like, I would say we were always there. So like when we would go up and do those like late March, you know, it'd be like early March, mid March was always our time frame. We were primarily fishing up there for like big giant pike, right? Pike that were coming into spawn. And the beauty of the Great Lakes is, like, whenever you get bit, you have no idea what it is. Like, it could be anything. But the biggest bonus to us was always brown trout. Like, browns were always super fun. They'd hit your tip-ups, and then eventually we just started jigging for them, you know, little Swedish pimples and small spoons and stuff, and we'd catch these trout. And the browns were pretty, I'd say plentiful. Like, it was pretty normal to catch one or two a day. And the crazy thing is, over time, we'd get a pike here and there, and it's not a numbers fishery as far as, you know, our pike fishing. It was, you could very well go up there for a day and a half, or go up for your weekend, and out of four guys, you catch two pike, but one of them is going to be over 40 inches. But the cool part was always the browns were like the bonus, right? Like, you could put out your two tip ups, being where you're allowed three line, like put out your two boards, and then, you know, you'd sit there and jake for your morning, at least until noon or so, that morning window for your trout. And the browns were always like the funnest part. And the crazy thing that's changed over time is just the lack of stocking in the brown trout in the Great Lakes. And just the numbers that have really declined over from that early 2000 stuff to present day. You know, it was never like a booming fishery. I think you hear a lot of old stories where it's like, oh yeah, like we used to catch hundreds of walleyes a day, or, you know, this, that. Like, it's nothing like it used to be. And I think the brown fishing is like that, not to those extreme numbers, but the brown fishing definitely used to be really incredible. Whereas now I feel like the pike fishing and like the trophy walleye stuff through the ice was kind of, it's been what it's been. I've really seen a change in it. Now, I really haven't done it the last 5-6 years since I started guiding full time. I get my fill of, I enjoy fishing out of my boat more than I enjoy fishing through a hole, sure, in that aspect. But it's, the browns were what really made it fun for me. I remember catching my first, like, I would call it big one, like a 12-pound brown. And I remember catching my first real big walleye on the old school oddball jig with a minnow. And it was a 30 and a half inch walleye. And then the brown trout was like a 12-pounder. Just, that was all on jig rod, which is super fun. And then go back to even 2013 is when I caught the state record pike, which was a 48 incher, which was pretty wild. And that was state record being for ice fishing. But which was a wild achievement, and just something that we always knew was swimming up there. Just no one had ever came in contact with it, but it was just cool. Like, it wasn't a numbers deal, but just going up there, and you almost had goosebumps the whole time, because you just never knew what was going to bite or what was going to swim into that area that you were fishing.
Man, I mean, you know, we talked about this before. I mean, you're a musky guy. You're known for all these things now. You're a grinder, you know, just, you know, you put in the time, you put in the, you know, it's an understatement to say that you put in the time and the hours and the days in a year to grind for big fish. I mean, you're just, you're that guy. But to hear about your stories where you're reflecting back to, like, you know, junior high and high school age, you know, I feel like I just want to kind of like recognize that a little bit, because look at the average like teenager nowadays. You couldn't take them somewhere 3 hours away to be out on a cold sheet of ice to grind out, you know, the potential for a couple of big bites on a weekend, right? Like nowadays we try to soft hand all of our kids into like perch and bluegill fishing because they need to catch a fish every 10 seconds. I feel like maybe that's like, you know, that's almost like a misconception. I think if we tested some of these kids a little, you know, they might have a chance. I feel like your story is kind of one of them. Like, did you feel like you were developing those skills to be kind of a grinder early on? Was that something that was sort of mentored into you, or did you see other people doing it, or did you even realize that, you know, some of your classmates were probably just going and catching a bunch of 9-inch, you know, crappies or whatever? Like, reflect on that a little bit.
No, I mean, I would say, like, I don't know, as far as, like, I'd say, like, work ethic was definitely something my dad instilled in me, and something that I don't want to say proud of, but I definitely carried that trait from my dad, and no matter what I did, even back to when I used to work construction or any of this, like, I would always get praised for working hard, or, you know, being the guy that would put his nose down and just get the job done, and in that sense. But I kind of, fishing for me was, I was just so addicted to it. I was such a unique case, I feel like, as far as being that age and being willing to do that. I mean, I remember my dad and his friends, like all those family guys we used to fish with, like, I would be like throwing a fit and like bawling my eyes out. I think the stories they tell me when we had to leave, because it was like dark, and it's like, I don't want to leave. Like, they could still bite, right? Like, and it's crazy to think that. And like, I still fish that way in a sense. I obviously get to fish a lot more, but knowing that like that weekend was my chance, and the next, you know, 5 days or until the next weekend rolled around, like, I was so in love with it. And I don't think that that's obviously normal, especially with that low of a success rate that we would have on those kinds of trips. But like, I would say my dad and his buddy, like, they made it fun, right? Like, we'd cook out on the ice, we'd grill out, we'd have fun. We tried to be, you know, somewhat comfortable as far as like, you know, it's funny, like, I never really grew up fishing in a shack, or like having a fish house, I guess, in Minnesota they call them. Like, you know, like, we were a lot of times 2 4-wheelers, you throw up a tarp across the two, and that was like your windbreak. But it was a pretty crazy, I don't know. Ice fishing is definitely where I started my addiction, and then my dad had finally got a boat, and then the whole can of worms really opened. Once I got into the open water stuff, things definitely changed. But I don't know. I would say, like, growing up, I don't know if you could. I didn't know I was a grinder. It's just that's what I love doing, and there was nothing else I wanted to do more than that. And, you know, just riding my bike down to the dam in the summer with, you know, fishing 2 rods in my backpack and some tackle, and, you know, all summer long fishing for just whatever would bite off the shore, whether it was I remember carp fishing one summer off of a bridge, and then like bass and whatever would bite, right? But the Great Lakes was always like my favorite place to go. I just loved being up in Door County, and then that Green Bay stuff. I mean, Door County is where I did all this stuff as a kid growing up, all this ice fishing, and it's still one of my favorite places in the world to fish to this day.
Yeah. So then fast forward a little bit, you know, kind of getting a little closer to where you're at today, you know, as a full-time guide and traveling around, like, just kind of talking about, you know, Green Bay and specifically, and I kind of want to whittle it down even into like the spring walleye fishing a little bit. Tell me a little bit about kind of where that really started for you, you know, like, you know, you guide now, you do trophy walleye trips, you know, like how and where did that really start for you?
So, I don't know, like, I didn't really know about any, I mean, this was pre-internet, so, I mean, internet was just getting started, but a lot of the stuff was, like, fishing forums, right? Like, I mean, I probably sound like I'm ancient, I'm 29 years old, but I didn't really know everything that was going on in the Lower Bay. I didn't really understand or know about, like, the Fox River Bite or any of that spring walleye stuff. I don't think it was really discovered or nearly as publicized as it is obviously today or in the last 10 years, how much it's blown up. But I remember towards the end there, I just, it was at 20, it was either 13 or 14, somewhere in there. But I remember taking a 6 gallon pail full of tip ups and a couple brown trout rods with me, and then like in an auger, and throwing in the back of my piece of crap work car, and then also having like 2 7-foot spinning rods in the box of crankbaits. And like on my way up Friday night, I'd drive up after work, I'd stop at the Fox River, I'd throw my waders on, I'd catch some walleyes offshore casting cranks, and then like sleep in the parking lot till like 2:33 in the morning, and then drive up, you know, another hour up into Door County, and then walk out in the morning with my auger and my bucket and my shit, and you know, drill myself in for the day, and fish ice fish for the weekend, right? Because there was still ice up in that northern part of Door County, but then the rivers were open on my way up, and I just wasn't going to drive past an open opportunity to catch some fish, right? So yeah. It was kind of just wild. Like I look back at these days, and I'm still crazy and fish a stupid amount of hours, but like the drive I just had for it, because it, you know, it was my time. I got to do it. I wasn't able to fish every day or do it for a living, so I didn't want to miss a single second of any possibility to go. I mean, I used to go up and drive to Green Bay after work in construction for 10 hours. I'd drive 2 hours after work on a Wednesday to go fish for 3 hours, sleep in my car, and then get up like 3 a.m. and drive back 2 hours south to go to work the next morning, right? Like, I was just so crazy in love with the fishery and what it had to offer. I tried to eat up as much of it as I could. And it eventually, obviously, where I'm at now, it became my job. But there was a lot of work that went in towards that.
Yeah. So now for you, I mean, you know, as far as your offerings, you know, you're a guide. And when it's not musky, when it's open water season, you know, when it's open water and it's not musky season, you know, talking about this spring, these really popular spring big walleye bites over there on the tributaries of Green Bay, or just in the, you know, the greater Green Bay area. You know, the Fox River, like you mentioned, gets a lot of publicity. I've talked about that a few times on this show. We've talked about some of the other stuff as well. But for you, where do you post your shingle? Where's kind of what your offerings are in that regard, as far as the big walleyes out of a boat in the spring?
It's the whole bay for me. I mean, anywhere in Wisconsin waters is where I'll be. It just depends. Like, our bite changes throughout the year, so the Fox River is the first thing to open. You can start out there, get in a boat, start catching some fish. You'll then live some, your smaller males and smaller females will be in there. They kind of winter in the river. And then I follow them wherever the biggest fish are. Like, we get a little push of big ones into the Fox. Generally, your best shot at a big one in the Fox is going to be after dark, either casting cranks after dark or trolling. But then as soon as that Ocano Peshtigo stuff opens up on the west shore, I'm up there getting out as soon fish that we're, you know, casting. That's where I think you've got there. And then the Door County stuff is your potential for, I believe, like the biggest ones, our biggest walleyes that we have in our system. But the Ocano stuff is fun. Like, a super shallow bite, casting rip and wraps and swim baits and hair jigs and stuff like that. It's a lot more fun, I would say, than the casting cranks thing at night is a blast. They just absolutely smack it. But the Ocano stuff is really fun too, right? Just getting the bites, casting for them. It's basically essentially musky fishing for walleyes is how I explain it. Just with more numbers, right? Like, you're fishing aggressive. There's no jig in a minnow BS. There's none of that. Like, it's fun, aggressive fishing. And you get to set the hook, which I'm always down for.
Has there been an evolution, you feel like, to yourself, your guiding, you know, as far as your fishing strategies out there, you know, developing maybe, you know, your strategy, or do you feel like you were mentored into that? You know, what are some of the things, and how did you sort of reach the conclusions to, like, what your strategy is today? And just kind of, you know, paint that picture for me a little bit.
Yeah, so my first introduction to, I'd say, like, the West Shore stuff, which is that Ocano Peshtigo stuff, which is probably the most popular or famous in most recent years, is really came out of a friend of mine who invited me to go on like a trolling trip up there in this out of Ocano, which I'd actually ice fished for in the past with my dad for big giant pike years prior, but I didn't really understand, you know, all the walleyes and fish that use that side of the bay in a walleye scenario. So he invited me up and we went and did some trolling, and this was post spawn stuff. And back in, this would have been 14 or 14 or 15, it was a trolling game. Like, the electronics, like, you didn't have the side imaging or G, like, it was, you put out your three boards a guy, and you just drag stick baits. A lot of, like, Smithwick Rogues, P10s. And I remember the first day we were out, we smacked. But it was a post-spawn bite, and we went up for a weekend, me and a buddy, and it was his show. It was his boat. I was just along for the ride, basically running rods and catching fish. But we had, like, our first day, we had, like, 55 or 60 fish, and our second day, we had, like, 30 or something cool. And that just really opened up my eyes. Now, these fish were all post-spawn, so this was, like, end of April, just before opening weekend. So that was really cool, and then, obviously, I was, like, intrigued by this whole bite, and then that's kind of when, I think that might have been, like, first year's IDO did a show out in O'Connell where they actually, like, casting for them. And then that next year, like, it was freaking Fire Tiger ripping wraps and casting, right? And yeah, it just now exploded to what it is now. And it is pretty funny to watch. Like, me and my one buddy Kyle always joke, like, we're so far in now to the custom colors and this and that. It's gotta have, you know, this or that, or that little dot of this color or that color, you know, that's too orangish, it needs to be more red or copper or gold, whatever, right? And, like, we're like, we used to just throw Fire Tiger ripping wraps and they'd choke them, right? Like, just destroy them. They didn't care what color it was. Like, you could pick out the ugliest thing and freaking walleye would slam it. Now, like, with all the pressure and everything else, like, they've gotten so finicky and fussy, and there's so much attention to detail, whereas, like, back in that, you know, 15, 16, 17, when we were casting ripping wraps to first start, like, those fish didn't care. They didn't give two craps about if there was enough purple or enough gold on it or this or that. Like, any color, didn't matter. I'll choke it. And I'm going to hit it on the fall every single time and just slam it, right? Like, now I'd say 80% of our fish, you actually don't feel them bite. You just go to lift up to make your next rip, and they pick it up off the bottom. They're so timid now around the baits. Because they've been caught, right? And they're just educated.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
back
yeah.
in the day, Fire Tiger number 6, baby, all day long. Didn't matter. I don't care if it's sunny, cloudy, windy, calm. Number 6, Fire Tiger ripping wrap. I'll catch all of them. Like, it was just ridiculous.
This JMO podcast is brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales in West Bend, Wisconsin. Cedar Lake Sales is Southern Wisconsin's largest Crestliner dealership, so whatever you're looking for, whether it's something family-oriented or a pontoon, maybe you're looking for a traditional fishing boat, or step it up to something that you can travel around and fish tournaments in, they are well known to have it all easy to check out in their huge indoor heated showrooms. Now, with a great service department and the confidence of their customers, Cedar Lake Sales is celebrating 55 years of trusted business. Again, if you are shopping for a boat, your shopping is not done until you've talked to a salesperson at Cedar Lake Sales. For more information on what they got, what they offer, head to the link in the description of this podcast. That's www.cedarlakesales.com. When you're, like, nowadays, when you're getting into the, like, the custom colors, when you're like looking for, or when you're trying to figure out the next awesome color, you know, custom color, or like next idea for that, like, how, like, what are you thinking about? What are your data points?
Man, like, I don't even know where we come up with any new custom colors. Like, there's so many. Like, I have probably 100 different custom colored ripping wraps, right? Like, they're now, like, when I go to pick a color nowadays, like, first thing, is it sunny or cloudy, right? Is the water clear or is it dirty? Is it windy or is it calm, right? Like, now there's so many more elements. Like, I'm not going to argue with the fish. I'm just going to go off data points of what they've liked in the past, what conditions I'm dealing with, and see, you know, make my decision based off of that. Now, that comes from years and thousands of hours of fishing, right, for them in that specific location and that bite. But as far, I don't know how you would, like, it's so hard to, like, come up with a new color. It's mainly now for me, like, I have my 6, I would say, like, go-to colors. Like, I know in the last 3 years, 90% of my fish are caught on this, right? Like, one of these 6 colors. And now, like, any modification I make to that is very subtle, right? Maybe it's a different belly color. Maybe it's a different color on the top. Maybe it's a different gill plate color. Like, so small. And honestly, like, you almost think it's just in your head. But I've been fortunate to fish, like, a lot of places around the Midwest and into Canada. And it doesn't matter the species. I swear that Green Bay fish are more color picky than any other place on Earth. It doesn't matter if it's smallmouth, muskies, or walleyes. Like, incredibly color sensitive. Maybe it's pressure, but there's other places that have more pressure than Green Bay for some species, right? But, our fishery is definitely blown up in the last 10, 15 years, and we get as much pressure, I would say, as anybody. I'm not saying to say we get more, but we get a ton of our smallmouth are freaking so smart.
Yeah.
That fishery's insane. And, like, I'll even have guys that I can accredit to saying, like, a really good friend and mentor of mine, Luke Ronestrand. Like, Luke's a huge bass nut and arguably the goat of musky fishing. And he'll agree with me all day. Like, those fish over there, and even he does the walleye stuff as well. Like, they are so color specific. It's just insane. And that's a guy that ties his own hair jigs and marabou jigs and a really attention to detail guy as well. And he'll, credit the fish the same way. Like, no, they're like, these fish over here, doesn't matter the species. Like, they are just color nuts. Like, they are so attention to detail. And maybe, who knows what it is. I would mainly put it to fishing pressure just due to the fact, like I said, we used to catch them number six rip and wrap fire tiger. Didn't matter. Right. And now so precise.
I feel like, I don't know if this could ever possibly be proven, but when you say it that way, I feel like I can make sense out of that where, you could argue a handful, a small handful, not many, but a few, like, large, destination walleye factories or just multi-species factories in the Midwest that do get a comparable amount of fishing pressure. But Green Bay probably gets the most amount of, like, artificial bait pressure. Like, all these other places, it's live bait. It's walleyes that, it's a leech under a bobber, or it's a, like, it's a creek chub, rig or whatever. And the pressure sort of, it's a lot of live bait pressure. And, but I feel like Green Bay, those fish, that would just be the way I make sense of it. Somebody could prove us wrong, but I feel like you probably, the amount of hours that you spend out there, I'm definitely going to listen. That might be part of it, is like, they haven't just seen so many baits. They've seen so many artificial baits. Like, they've seen so many rip and wraps.
I'm sure guys could come behind us and, pluck off a couple of fish with live bait. But the reasoning is behind the artificials for Green Bay is that you're dealing with the fifth biggest lake in the world, right? Like, you have to cover water. And unfortunately, fishing live bait, there's nothing fast about fishing live bait.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure a guy can go behind me and pitch a jig and a jig and a minnow or this or that or the other, or slip bobber and leech, and I'm sure he's going to pluck off some fish, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to cover 10 times the amount of water that guy is. And I'm sure there's days where that guy's going to outfish me, don't get me wrong, but it's just a super fun place to fish due to the fact that our fish do react so well to artificials, and we get to power fish, right? You see so much now, like, is in the bass fishing world, just fishing world generally. Is this guy a power guy, a finesse guy, right? Like, is he a shallow water guy or a deep water guy? Like, Green Bay walleyes are so much like power fishing, which makes them so fun to catch. Like,
yeah,
the year of COVID when a lot of these guys couldn't go to Canada to make their annual walleye trips, I remember taking guys out and I wrecked their Canadian walleye trips for them. They're like, we've never caught fish this big, right? Like, we've never caught like a lot of mid upper 20 inch fish, and two, like, this is way more fun than a jig and a minnow over the side of the boat. I'm like, yeah, this is like what I feel God intended walleye fishing to be like, right?
Yeah,
like, this is like catching a muskie on a bucktail on a figure eight. Like, it doesn't get any better than this, right? Like, so it was funny because I think I wrecked a lot of people's their annual trip to Canada for them during that COVID year. And it's, don't get me wrong, like, the Canadian stuff is awesome. But, like,
oh, yeah, there's, like, a time and a place
totally,
for it. Like,
totally.
But not to totally leave this whole color-sensitive thing, because I find that to be interesting. I think, people like hearing about color. For you, when you're, in those bites, looking back, fishing, like, Green Bay, spring walleyes, like, is the color sensitivity thing, like, is that like hour by hour, day by day, week by week, or do you look back and see where one particular season this color was very popular, and then the next year you had to find a new color? Like what's the pace or rate in which you're willing to go after a totally different color?
Sure. No, like, it's definitely hour to hour. Like I said, I have probably, and I don't know for sure, but I say that six, like, main core colors that I play off of. But I definitely have baits I use outside of that. Like, I wish I only had six custom colored rip and wraps. My bank account would be yeah, much yeah. happier with me, right? Like, good Lord. Yeah, my financial advisor would be much more proud of me, but that's not the case. Like, there's plenty of stuff, like, changing hour to hour, and one specific day they like this one or that one, or this shade of copper or that shade of purple or whatever, blues, silvers. Like, there's so many, every color of the sun, right? It's tough. Like, it definitely changes hour to hour, day to day, but I've had probably these same six colors for the last 4 or 5 years that have been really solid. They're purples and golds. Like, that's not a secret in Green Bay. Like, purple and gold is king. It's just a matter of what other elements can you add into a pattern like that. I mean, Green Bay is the whole reason Rapala came out with like three of their colors. Like, Rapala Rip and Wrap is the number one selling lure of Rapala, period, because of Green Bay. Like, imagine that. There's a tackle shop in Green Bay that sells more Rip and Wraps than any other store in the country. Put that against a Cabela's, an Academy, a Dick's, any of those, right?
Yeah.
Shields, anyone. There's a little Monpa tackle shop that sells more Rip and Wraps than any of those other stores in the whole entire country based off of that fishery.
To talk about the fishing, if you had, like, you know, we'll just kind of wrap this up with maybe, like, I don't know, you pick it. Maybe it's three, five, whatever. Just, like, sort of your checklist of recommendations, maybe tips and tricks, or just things that you think are going to be impactful this year that could be sort of an awareness or recommendation, something, you know, it could be tackle-oriented, or it could just be, like, a on-the-water ethics kind of a thing. Like, anything about fishing the Green Bay Tribs this spring, any recommendations there, man? Go ahead.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting one. We've never seen a spring like this. I mean, and I guess I've been there for basically 10 years in O'Connell now, almost, like 9 years. But in that O'Connell Pachuco stuff. But it's going to be weird. We have no runoff. We have super low water in the bay itself. I don't know. I'm worried if we're going to have a lack of dirty water just due to the fact that we don't have much for runoff, and a lot of our, like, feeder creeks and ditches and outside of our main tributaries, like, those are pretty dry. The marshes are pretty dry just because there was no snow in Green Bay this off season. We had one big dump of like 12 inches from one storm, and then after that, like, there hasn't been snow on the ground in Green Bay for a month and a half. So I'm not sure. I think it's going to be a really unique year. I think the fish are going to be really, really scattered and very spooky. They get smarter every year. They know what boats sound like. They know what trolling motors sound like. They know what graphs sound like, right? Like, all the sonar noise that's going on now. Like, they're getting smarter and smarter. And now we're also dealing with the fact that our water is going to be 18 inches or 2 feet lower than normal. So they're going to be in shallower water situations. Like, I think it's going to be an interesting year, to say the least. I don't think fishing out there is getting any easier. We're definitely, if you're not adapting with a lot of the techniques and the lures, you're definitely getting fallen behind. Like, the guy that's still throwing a number six Fire Tiger isn't, you know, competing anymore. There's a couple things you can do or mod. Like, the biggest thing, I've got a couple of YouTube videos on this. Like, the one thing I do a lot or modify a lot of my baits is I actually replace a lot of my treble hooks on my rip and wraps. The first thing I do, but do not replace them. Or if you want to just do it in a, and save yourself a little bit of cash but still have a higher hookup percentage, biggest thing I do is just flip-flop the treble hooks. So when they come, the bigger treble hook is going to be on the belly of the rip and wrap, and then the smaller hook is on the back. And I want that larger gap hook and that little bit bigger hook on the back of the bait. So I'll simply just flip them, just take, you know, one off the middle, put it to the back, and vice versa, right? Now, if you want to take that to the next level, leave that bigger hook on the belly and then replace that back hook with one the same size as the belly hook. But I really love those BMC hybrid trebles, like that short shank EWG kind of hybrid treble. They get the tips kind of curl in just a touch at the top. They're super sticky hooks. Because the reason being is that back hook, so many of these fish now are just pecking at these lures. And like I said, we're getting a lot of them on the lift. As we're coming to lift up again, they just kind of pin them to the bottom, but they're not sucking them in like they used to. They're not just cracking them on the fall like they used to. So that belly hook really isn't that important anymore. If they get both hooks, you're going to land them, right? But a lot of times you're just getting it with that back hook. So upgrading that rear hook and or even just flip-flopping or switching it so you have a larger hook in the back is very, very, very important in my case, personally. Like that's something I don't throw a rip ramp with a standard hook configuration into the water. That's a big no-no for me.
You know, the whole conversation around the custom colors thing, you know, it's crazy how the Great Lakes, you know, you think about like Lake Erie or whatever with all the custom crankbaits.
Yeah.
You know, it's the epicenter on planet Earth of like custom crankbait colors, right? Well, there's so much more trolling going on there for walleyes like than, you know, pretty much anywhere else. You know, I mean, you can just make those arguments. And when you think about just how effective the rip and wrap game is in the spring, that power fishing game on Green Bay or the greater Green Bay area, you know, in the spring, that shallow water bite, you know, you talk about, you know, there's so much truth to the inefficiency of live bait. I don't think that there's an example of where live bait is, you know, an efficiency against power fishing with like, you know, artificials. So it's like, you know, that guy might be able to pluck a couple behind you, but you're going to catch, yeah, you're going to cover 10 times the water. You're going to cover, you're going to ultimately, you know, 10 times more fish are going to see your lure. And you just got to figure out those little details of keeping them pinned with the hook recommendation and just keep putting in the hard work from dawn till dusk. Don't get tired. Put in the work. And it's just, it's literally one of Mother Nature's greatest walleye fishing opportunities, especially in this part of the world. Like, I just think it's special. But so anyways, yeah, just a little what I like to take away from it. That being said, if anything else pops in your head, man, throw it out there. Otherwise, dude, I just love having your time, getting the opportunity to just hear some of your stories and experiences and have you on, highlight you a little bit. You can let us know where people can find you if they have questions or inquiries or maybe some content, like your YouTube page or whatever. Throw it out there.
Yeah, so best if you're looking to get a hold of me, I guess best way is either Instagram or Facebook, or you can check out my website, which is just DougWagnerFishing.com. My YouTube channel has a ton of informative walleye videos. Like every video we post, we really focus on being informative. It's not just sit back and watch us catch fish. We try and have something in there to give you guys some kind of insight or tips that you can take to your own body of water, or if you're going to come to the bay itself and use that stuff to your advantage. But YouTube channel is just Doug Wagner Fishing. Pretty hard to miss. A lot of musky content on there too. If you're bored. Are you looking to spend even more money? I tell you what's more inexpensive than a custom rip and wrap is is musky baits. But that's a whole nother tunnel. But I'm excited for the season. I've got I'm gonna go pick up my boat here actually Monday, and then I start working right away on Tuesday. So I'm freaking jacked. I'm ready to go. There's already been guys out fishing, which has been bugging me. I've been not able to get out yet, but it is what it is. But I'm jacked. I'm going to get after it. I've got a super sweet boat this year. Really excited for my whole setup. I'm just excited for the season overall. I got a lot of stuff planned, not only with walleyes, but I'm going to do more bass fishing this year than I have in the past. I want to take advantage of some more of that. I've been missing out on some of that the last couple of years. And then get into my favorite thing in the world, which is muskies. So I don't know. I got a lot to look forward to this year. I'm super stoked about the season as a whole. But it always starts with big, giant walleyes. I absolutely love them. They're an absolute riot. Love catching big walleyes.
That's it, man. We'll sign it off right there. That's we got a bow on it, dude.